still.
Oh. Tom just brought me a box of Kleenex. I'm good. I'm good. but it does it does get to you, and I think that the media has a tremendous responsibility to balance our coverage that we receive, because a lot of us, if you watch the news, you assume that that is the reality,
right.
And it's just such a very small portion of reality out there. So I had to leave. I had to find something more upbeat, where I could laugh more.
Well, especially in that period of time, what we understand about the world was through TV and newspaper, and probably more so TV than even newspaper at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, if you're dedicated to one station, which most families are, mm-hmm. you have one or two spots a night, and that's what your whole context or your whole idea of what the world is from mm-hmm. those 2.5 hours.
Right.
So it's all blood and... Mm-hmm. I was talking to some people, and I remember I used to love the slides, you know, the little artistic fire,
and
you know, they would do these horrific fire slides. So you're talking about a fire,
right?
To the illustration someone had drawn of a house on fire,
right?
Or the murder one,
yeah.
Or and it's just that's what you think of your world and where mm-hmm. you live, and you look at some of the statistics sometimes get in the way of a good story, and you look at, you know, violence rates or you know. Take your pick of your, and the statistics don't always match to what the coverage the media has on mm-hmm. a particular event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before 9/11, you know what the big story was shark attacks.
Oh, really?
The shark attacks and arsenic in the water. Those were the two big
wow.
news stories prior to 9/11.
Huh.
And then 9/11 happened, and it was we were obviously talking about a lot heavier things, but mm-hmm. it's just I always find it interesting that. How the media sometimes sets the agenda for what's on our mind and what we talk about in the morning at work or with
mm-hmm.
our friends,
mm-hmm.
and then until something else more interesting comes along.
Yeah, and I mean the news basically purports to be holding up a mirror to people's worlds,
mm-hmm.
and it's distorted. But they're not only holding up a mirror to a very small percentage. And then even if I always say if you're going out to cover a tornado, say mm-hmm. for Channel 11 or any channel, so you've got that horrific event that's a very small portion of reality for a very small portion of the people.
Mm-hmm.
But then you take it even finer and you find the worst destruction that you could possibly find that came from that tornado.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sliver it down even more to an even worse situation. And then you hold that up and say, this is your world. And then people start reacting like that and start living their lives like, ooh, maybe my world is something to be afraid of, or maybe I should mm-hmm. be afraid of that person, or maybe I should be afraid of my, you know, there was just too much fear for me to be a part of it.
Can I ask who decides that kind of thing? Because I can't mm-hmm. imagine the news anchors themselves going out to these horrible, atrocious scenes
mm-hmm.
and just being excited to be there and have this story. Like talking to our own Stan Turner, he was telling me, just he went to so many murder scenes,
yeah,
so many saw so many bodies. It
yeah.
really got to him,
yeah.
And it starts weighing down on your soul.
It does,
and
it does. I mean, I can't imagine you wanting to have that.
So,
no.
Who is this media person that represents all these things? Encourages
who?
It?
I mean, who makes those decisions?
Yeah.
It would be. First thing that I want to say is competition will make that decision for
mm-hmm.
you. It isn't necessarily a person, but it's the idea that somebody else will have it, and we need to have it first, and we need to have it the, you know, the biggest and the boldest and all that. And then if you go inside the newsroom, there would be a certain direction that would come from management. There would be another direction that would come from the news director, and then the day-to-day, moment-to-moment decisions comes from somebody named the assignment editor, who is just manning the phones and listening to police scanners. And, you know, we may go out and cover a story that came across a police scanner that wasn't necessarily a big story that meant anything to you, but it just happened to be the only thing that happened that
sure,
day. So
sure.
that gets the magnifying glass that day. So that gets to a person
yeah,
after a while.
I believe it.
There's not a police scanner for kindness. You know, I wish there was, but the police just talks about, you know, the scanner just squawks about fires and burglaries and things like that.
But decorating scents.
Yes. We did not use a police scanner at all
in
decorating scents.
11 years decorating scents.
Yeah. Well, it's still on, I guess, occasionally.
How many episodes?
About 400.
That's a lot of
yeah,
episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. We did. Yeah. It was. And I was told by Steve Adelman, who was the guy who was the producer on that, I was told that, this is just going to be a hobby. This will last maybe 13 weeks. Don't worry about it. And, you know, 10 years later, I was the one who quit. So.
Well, the best part is now all these demonstrations and decorating scents are still relevant. You go out of YouTube and you go online, and I was watching some last night to prep for our day-to-day, and I was watching you do the clock on the wall, and that's one of the
I've got 400 episodes. Clock on the wall?
Let's see. You were it was a mechanical clock you're putting onto a wall, and
then painting the numbers onto the wall. There's great ideas, and I think we need them now more than ever because it's all about reduce, reuse, recycle, dumpster dive, you know, making our landfills less full and saving money. So.
We are a throwaway society, and like we were talking about earlier in the program, there's so much that we toss away, and then the challenge is then a week later we wish we hadn't done it, and then we keep things we shouldn't have anyway.
I'm trying to think what decorating scents would have done with all of those kinescopes lying in the East River.
Scrape them for silver.
We could have done something.
We're doing a remote this summer, actually, from the river. We're going to do a scuba dive. ideas for the station.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Let's talk about the next stage now. You're out of TV. And
I am.
What is the Joan Does Now? I went to the site, and your goal right now is positive, you know, being positive, being nice to one another. Tell me a little bit about this.
My goal right now is to encourage everybody to know that they have the capacity to change the world. Peace. I formed a nonprofit called Peace Begins With Me, and as I look back at my life, I've probably been searching for peace my whole life, trying to find peace with myself and peace with how the world operates and peace with, you know, do I really matter and all those questions. I've been a deep, wide thinker for most of my life, I guess. And the conclusion that I came to, you think about even television news, it served a purpose in this. It allowed me to, it was all about distilling information, distilled, take 5 hours and turn it into a minute and 10 seconds and have it have meaning and all that. And when I started to distill the concept of peace down to its most basic possibility, it begins inside each human being. You can't point fingers and get peace. You can't say, well, I'll be peaceful when you stop doing that. I'll be peaceful when the Mideast has peace. I'll be peaceful when... It's like... It doesn't happen that way. So my peace organization is inviting people to be kinder to themselves, to know that they are valuable, that they are powerful, and then to use that power for good. You know, watch the energy that you bring into relationships and into rooms and into Target stores. And we're asking people to be nice to each other and to themselves.
And Joan Steffen is an author. Your first book, And She Sparkled. Tell me a little bit about, is this a biographical book? I admit I have not read the book yet.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm leaving.
I know she's leaving right now.
Her arms are up in a huff.
I was actually going to maybe bring a couple copies and we could kind of review them here, but we'll do that next time.
Okay.
But tell me, is it a biographical book?
Yeah. It's my life story. Okay. It's told as a metaphor, though.
Okay.
It looks like a children's book, but I always say it's a children's book for grown-ups. And I wrote it for myself. I never thought it would be published as a book. I just wrote it to try to make sense out of my life, why I felt like there was something missing when the world had told me again and again that I had success, and success didn't fill the gap.
So if someone's expecting the big gossip behind the closed doors of Channel 11, this is not the book for you. But if you want to know about Joan's life and... really where you've come to be, this is a great read.
Yeah. And it's at the beautiful bookstore down the way.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then your next book has been Peace In, Peace Out, which was published last year.
It just came out in September of 2012. And it's, as you said, Peace In, Peace Out. And it's just, it's half little suggestions on how to recover who you are, love who you are, honor who you are, and little suggestions on how to just move that out into the world. I mean, from the simplest of suggestions to when you watch the news, watch it with a purpose. If you're going to watch the news, watch it with a purpose. Don't watch it with this idea like, oh my gosh, now I'm filled with all these horrible fears. Watch it with the idea that you offer kindness, even a kind thought to the people who are being profiled in the news. Watch it knowing that you have the power to affect. And I'm just a big believer that we're all connected. And so... if you see pain, your responsibility is to offer a kind thought at the very least. My question is, what's the least you can do? And then do that. Start there.
Because we all have an answer with the least we can do. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. Let's take a break. We'll be back with our guest, Joan Stephan, on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here with my guest, Joan Stephan. We're just watching some video from a few years ago.
Yeah, of Cora Ann Mihalik from her last WTCN newscast. I don't know. There are so many names that you were bringing up that I had forgotten.
Joan's going to get her on-air kiss. Yep, there she gets her on-air kiss here in this video we're watching. Sorry. If you're at home, you can type in Cora Ann Mihalik's last newscast and watch this tender moment here on video.
I think I might have been pregnant at that time, too. So, oh, my goodness, I had so many. There I got my kiss. I had so many issues when I was pregnant because I put on 60 pounds with my first pregnancy. And they always say that television puts on 10 pounds. I think when you're pregnant, you put on 60 pounds. It's more like 120 pounds.
And thankfully, they have that desk and then things.
It wasn't enough. I needed a larger desk.
Hey, you've always been beautiful to me. So
thank you.
One thing I really like, and you mentioned this on your website, and it's also online, is mm-hmm. Something to think about. Promos. I want to just play a little bit of this, and I want to talk about this.
Okay.
My suggestion to you today is to grow up in a small town. I don't know, it's too late for most of you, but how about this? How about if you just act as if you grew up in a small town? And to me, that means acting as if that person you run into on the street or in the store, you are going to see them again. They might even be related. You have a responsibility to them. And if we take that small town care with one another, we might just become a community. Something to think about. Remember that boomerang you tried throwing as a kid? It would never come back. It just kept going. Well, life is nothing like that. Life is like the boomerangs in the cartoons we watched as kids. They throw it, it come right back to bop the character on the head. What I'm saying here is that quite often, what you send out in life is what you get back. With apologies to Forrest Gump, life is like a boomerang. What are you throwing out today? It's something to think about.
I love those.
I love those, too. That's great.
We did 40 of them. It was my husband and I did that on our own. It wasn't a Care 11 thing. Mm-hmm. We footed the bill for it. We did the editing. And then Care 11 was kind enough to air them twice a day for about a year and a half. But so my husband and I did it for our kids. We wanted them to know what was important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I loved it. I got more response from that than almost anything else I ever did on Care 11. Because, I mean, people would come from across a drugstore and hug me and say, thank you so much for putting that on the air. And I thought, maybe that's why I'm here at Care 11, you know?
Do you still, I imagine you still, people will see you're in line or you're talking to someone, like, didn't you used to be Joan Stephan?
Right. It's usually the voice, though. Mm-hmm. It's usually the voice, which probably means I've changed an awful lot, but let's just assume I haven't. But no, most people recognize my voice.
Do you enjoy that? Do you enjoy when people?
I love people. Yeah. I love people. And mostly when people talk to me in person, it's about nice things. If they want to be mean, they write a letter.
Well, that's right.
And that's just the way it is in television or media or anything.
You were there in the era where there was no emails to flash a comment about, but you got the letters and the phone calls. I remember.
Yeah, terrible.
Let's go back to my 12-year-old world here. And someone asked you, do you get a lot of fan mail? And mm-hmm. you said, well, I get a lot of mail and things don't go right. And
right.
You mentioned that there were people very angry when you and another female would be co-anchoring the news together because that's just not how it goes. You not have two females anchoring the news.
Or they'd call in and they'd be angry about
a
color that mm-hmm. I wore. Like, I wore a hot pink.
You've got to be
kidding. No. It's crazy. I wore a hot pink suit jacket one night and on this particular person's television, it came off as orange mm-hmm. because her television wasn't you know.
Sure, it was kind of.
Tint.
Wasn't accurate. But she called in and was livid because I had worn orange on St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, it was just, and I was called Satan by a woman because because I didn't see the Virgin Mary in a cinnamon bun. That was part of our, like a before we go kind of a moment.
Well,
and
she's
so,
totally right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, there is that satanic influence apparently. Yeah, it's crazy. Or people would get upset that I was holding a pen, which I had to hold to make notes because someone was in my ear telling me things. They would get angry about the craziest things. But I'm so glad I'm not part of the email era. I don't know that I could survive. I was just talking to Elizabeth Reese about that the other day, and it's crazy what people will write over and over and over again.
So occasionally, so my website, if you Google like WCCO or Care 11, my site luckily will pop up as one of the, as an archive site, and people who are very angry occasionally don't always like do things carefully, so they'll write an email off to me thinking that I'm the Channel 4 website, and I save these because they're very. I gotta be honest, they're humorous to me.
Yeah.
And
if you're not the person they're talking about.
It's right.
Totally humorous.
I find it humor either way, but yeah. Like, I can't believe you know, you this and that, and it's just, there's a lot of intensity and anger in the audience.
Pat Miles once pulled me aside because, you know, I'd taken a hit a few times. They always used to publish these around the newsroom, so you'd see what the people were saying
about
you. And she said, you got to think of them as voices from the insane asylum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You got to make some of these email-related something to think about. Do it again. Update it.
Yeah. So okay, I have a story here I want to play, and I want you to promise me not to get too sad. And this is a tough one.
Okay.
Now let's listen to this one.
A famous American beef eater is finding herself asking, where's the job tonight? Clara Peller, who brought fame to herself and Wendy's hamburgers with her Where's the Beef ads, lost her job yesterday after she did an ad for a Campbell's product. And today, Clara says that move has her steamed.
I did the Prego commercial because they didn't want any more commercials at Wendy's. And Wendy's told me I could do it. I made some money, which is nice for an older person.
Oh, Clara Peller.
And Wendy says when Clara did an ad for Prego spaghetti sauce insinuating that she had found the beef, it ruined her Wendy's image.
Another well, there you go. I didn't want you too sad now. This is a tough one.
It is a hard one.
Clara.
I loved Clara. No, she was a pretty cute little actress.
That's a defining of an era right there to have a Clara Peller commercial
exactly.
Spot in the news.
Exactly. No, that was great. Thank you. I can't believe all the little minutia that you've been able to dig up.
It's
kind of like the Inside the Actor's Studio guy, right?
Well, you know, it's fun, and when you see like yourself, and you see you're every Saturday, you expect SNL, and then Joan Stephan, you know, right before then. So it's tough when you go away and we don't see you for a long time.
It was hard that decision to leave.
And they got you to come back for a while.
They got you
to come back. And
they did.
How'd they convince you to come back?
They said you only have to work for 3 hours on Sunday night, and they paid me. And then I thought, okay, I can do it. It was just time for me to have my weekends back, and it was time for me to honor, you know, for lack of a better word, my soul. My soul was saying that isn't where I was supposed to be. I was supposed to be doing something else.
But even if you're doing TV on Sunday night, you're still thinking about that day.
All day long.
Exactly. I mean, when I do this for an hour,
radio is a tough job, I think, because I've had a couple of offers to do radio over the years, and I couldn't do it because it's all the time. You're always a vacuum cleaner looking for this bit of minutia that you could put on the air or this funny story and writing it down. And you have to really be really hyper aware of stuff all the time and reading for a purpose instead of just reading for fun.
It sounds easy.
It does, but it's not easy to do well. And you do it well.
Well, I appreciate that. The website, joanstephan.com, your organization is called again.
Peace Begins With Me, and it's peacebeginswithme.org.
And this is a nonprofit.
It is a nonprofit, yep, because, all we're doing is creating the simplest campaign. And right now, the simplest campaign that we've come up with is called the Hero Card. And we it's just a little card. I kind of call it the kindness currency, where if you see somebody being kind, if you see somebody with a smile, if you see somebody just being kind to somebody else, it's a card that says you are a hero in this world that can feel really disconnected. Maybe it was a smile, maybe it was a connected conversation, but that's heroism in my book. It's not how hard you can hit a baseball. It's not how high you can climb a mountain. It's how you move through your life. And, you know, being, as a friend of mine said, being an adder to life instead of a subtractor. Mm-hmm. And everybody can look at their moment to moment, their life, and say, okay, was I adding to something there? I hope so. Was I subtracting? I hope not.
What's next for you?
Somebody asked me the other day if I'll retire, and it's like my job right now is to offer kindness and to be kind. I don't think I'm going to retire from that.
Wait,
I think I'm just going to keep doing. I'm just going to keep going and seeing what doors open, because that's how my life has worked so far. I'm kind of like Forrest Gump.
Can you see yourself retired on a rocking chair with a glass of lemonade? Can you see yourself doing that?
Give me a grandchild, maybe I'll talk about it.
Okay.
I don't know. I used to think I was lazy, but I am pretty introspective, so I could spend a lot of time thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But my great joy lately has been to go out and to speak publicly. And I used to dread that. And now I go out and I give speeches. I was just out in California and gave one, and, Chicago and around here, I've been doing quite a bit of speaking. And there's just great joy in me for that, just because I'm talking about things that matter to me.
What kind of organizations are a fit for you?
Let's see. The last, I did something for the Lucy Hobbs Project, which is kind of a women in leadership, mm-hmm. Within the dental industry thing. That was out in California. Gustavus Adolphus College.
Sure.
I just did an event for, I'm doing something at St. Thomas. I'm doing something at St. Kate's this summer. I'm a little bit all over, but and I just did a church, Bethany Christian School.
Oh, sure.
This week. So I'm just, Anybody who wants to kind of feel recharged, hopefully, is who I would want to talk to.
I think a lot of people need that, and I think that this is a great message that I think that we need to hear that more often.
I think so too.
We need to say it to each other.
We hear the opposite regularly, so why not try to balance it?
And
out?
It's awkward to hear that the positive side of it.
Yeah.
At first.
Yeah. The world is good.
My guest, Joan Stephan. Joan, thank you so much for being on.
That was my joy. Thank you.
I hope we'll have you back again sometime soon.
Awesome. Now that I know where you are.
That's right. That's right. This is Flashback Twin Studies. Tom Osmond will be back next week with Johnny Canton of WLTE. We'll be in next Saturday. Till then, we'll see you later.